what else? So we'll just fix our watches. But if Vivian has got it wrong, press Parliament or we need different clocks around here. But it is a great welcome to everyone here with us again. And I'm glad that most of the committee members are here. Wondering if that is the Honourable Esther Hazen's jacket there. Oh, all right, no, that's fine. Do we have an apology from the Honourable Esther Hazen? Okay. This is, we'll come to that in a minute. But just in the opening and welcome, before we go any further, I need to just clarify an item on the agenda. I think at some point we thought we also, the Auditor General would also be speaking to the DPI specifically today. But it would appear as if that has not yet been signed off. And so the Auditor General's office has offered to come here next week, Tuesday, I understand, and to brief us on that. That is the DPI report. Are we all on the same page? Right. So if the Office of the Auditor General will brief us on the entities that fall under DPI. So let's get that straight here. The other issue is with respect to the first draft of the colloquium report. I had a call over the weekend from Mr. Medina, who pointed out that this was not yet ready. Not yet ready for distribution, let alone consideration. Furthermore, as you know, I said last week the transcripts would only be here Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday morning. So I will adjust that and let you know. What that then means, well, that's, I think it's just letting us know that they're tracking things, is that we will, I was hoping we will deal with the minutes. Yes, we will be. After the minutes are dealt with, we would then expect perhaps to finish round about 12:30, if not earlier. All right? Are we all on board with that? Yeah. I have just put in Mr. Medina's situation regarding the first draft. All right. On that particular note, let me at least welcome the, let's have the adoption of the agenda. Can someone with those amendments please propose the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Colonel. Seconded by the Honourable Williams. And now, officially for the apologies, we have with us, the Honourable Esther Hazen, his particular apology. His particular apology indicates that he will not be able to attend the meeting scheduled to for tomorrow due to family responsibility. And that has the imprimatur, if you like, of the Inkatha Freedom Party. In other words, it follows all the requirements of a submission of an apology for a committee meeting. So that's Honourable Esther Hazen. Then we have, as it were, I don't want to use the word standing apology, but rather I know that the Honourable MacPherson does have a slight problem, but I'm also looking at his colleague, the Honourable Hill Lewis. He will, of course, put in, just as a formality, that kind of late apology every time, and I think it's 9:30, if I'm not mistaken. Those are the only apologies I have that we have received, and that comply with the requirements. Just remember that anyone who arrives half an hour later or an hour later, and I need to put it to the committee, if we're due to start at 9 and the committee due to end at 1, and that's the agenda you have received, and you decide to, you know, stroll in at 11:30, I'm not sure if you have attended the committee meeting. So I just thought I should mention that because it will be noted on your attendance register. Then with respect to people here this morning, thank you very much, Director General of Trade and Industry, Mr. Lionel October. We also have Mr. Khan here with us. Don't look so serious. We're not going to eat you, the Chief Financial Officer. Then we also have an attendance from the Office of the Auditor General, Ms. Meyerberg, the Business Executive, thank you, and also Mr. Dulani Moyo, Manager in the Office of the Auditor General, and Ms. Saraj Naidu, thank you. On that note, can you please, let's just get we're adoption of the agenda. We've done that. Didn't we move it? We had. Yes, I don't know where your mind was there, but it was clearly not in the room. Yes, we did. Honourable Colonel and Honourable William. Right, okay. On that note, we're going to start off with the briefing by the Office of the Auditor General, yourself, Ms. Meyerberg, and your buddy. Do you want me to do the minutes first? Okay, have we got them? Fine. Doesn't sound like my mind's in the room either. The minutes of the 30th of August, room E249. Engagement with the Office of the Auditor General on local procurement earlier on the briefing, etc. Present is everyone who was present. With respect to the schedules, is that correct? Right. Then we have the in attendance, Trade and Industry, and the Office of the Auditor General. And then the opening and welcome. Can we please turn to page 2? Which is still, of course, looking at those issues. And then we have the adoption of the agenda, the consideration of minutes. For briefing by the DTI on fourth quarter financial and non-financial performance for the 2015-2016 financial year. That's the fourth quarter. Page 3. The committee deliberated and raised the following key issues. The impact of zero growth on the SA economy and whether the industrialization drive of the government can address this, the decline in foreign direct investment and its impact, the status of the national liquor policy, the status of the manufacturing competitive enhancement program, the status of the Black Industrialist, page 4, the Black Industrialist program and the absence of job targets. We need to follow up on the job targets per se. Concerns with respect to the performance of the National Regulator for Compulsory Specs. Status of industrial parks and contribution towards industrialization. The nature of investment and whether the industrial parks are labor intensive. Engagement with the Office of the Auditor General on local procurement. Page 5. The committee then deliberated and raised the following issues. Non-compliance of organs of state with respect to requirements for local production and content. Verification of local content. The cost implications of verification and who should bear the cost. Resolutions. This was with respect to the Department of Trade and Industry, submits the legal methodology regulations and the integrated national export strategy, and I'm just sort of looking in the direction of the DG with respect to these. To the second issue, provides the committee with a briefing on the status of industrial parks and the Black Industrialist Program. And then the next point, the Committee further resolved that the Office of the Auditor General table regulations for audit outcomes related to supply chain measures. Isn't that it? Adjournment. Right, the register. On that note, can I have someone to propose adoption of the minutes of the 30th? Thank you, Honourable Montage, seconded by the Honourable Williams. And then we're back on track. Honourable Nkongi?
No, thank you, President. I was not in the last meeting. So that is why I waited for the report to be adopted by those members of present.
Yeah.
But I'm having a concern on the precedent that we keep in our union. I am worried about this. Because I want to know whom I'm writing this minute for. I'm writing this minute for the public. When they have access to them, they can understand and communicate with them or what. Because there are issues that I want to raise which are not making sense to the outside world. For example, chapter 7.
Page
2. Briefing by the CI. As I'm reading this briefing, I understand it. As a member of parliament that participates in the portfolio committee on trade and industry. From 4.2.1 to 4.2.2, I understand what the writer is trying to say, but someone else does not understand. So I don't know how can we improve in the writing. Because you want to explain, because what to say the strategic office is related to the promotion, I know that's the headline. And then when we say the economic environment of slow growth as a result of the global economic conditions, I understand that you're saying that because of the global economic conditions, many, many countries, especially developing countries, they have been slow growth. And South Africa has been affected as a developing nation. And then you move as you write this minute. Because someone, I'm worried, who's reading this minute is not going to understand. I'm not sure that I'm making sense. But I understand what you're writing, but I'm worried about someone who's staying in my street, NY 57, number 28. Where they're going to be able to understand this thing.
Thank you very much for that point, Honourable Mkongi. There are two aspects to this. Perhaps also to use the same example on page 2, 4.1. We took a decision that the detail of the presentation or the Hansard itself, which is coming, if it applies to this, it doesn't apply to this. The detailed presentation is available on request, and that is of course to others outside of the committee. To ourselves, we already have that presentation, which would have been issued, which is on the parliamentary website. So one of the we can have this debate in on this matter because it is an important debate, but we've been asked to reduce the amount of paper that is printed. And hence, yes, something like these minutes, which now are 5 pages, in the past were 7 pages in length. But we've been asked to reduce them on condition. This is in on the parliamentary website. So now what we ought to try and find out to one of our committee secretaries committee is this on the parliamentary website? Because it won't be the first time an institution says it's on the website. Then you go and you look up your headcount and it's not there. So I want that verified. If that is the reason. However, what we must do is insist again that anything like the colloquium or legislation, there is a Hansard transcription. But you do have a point here because I always said if I come back to the committee and I haven't been there for some time and I get minutes, does it mean anything to me even sitting here? And we need to be more cautious about that. So I must accept that. Thank you, Honourable and Honky. All right. But it's a very valid point. You know, this is not for us, it's for people's parliament. It's for us plus the people. On that particular note then, if we may return to the briefing by the Office of the Auditor General, Ms. Myers. Thank you, and your colleagues.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you for this opportunity. As indicated, annually we do an audit on the entities and departments, and it's been our pleasure to present to you the outcomes of the 2015 audit result. As indicated, the department's annual report has been available. Can unfortunately include it in this briefing. So today's briefing is really focused on the entities within the DPI portfolio. We really want to come and assist you in terms of your oversight role, and that is why we come here with our insights and outcomes to assist you in terms of what you also need to do. Just a brief overview of what we do. I know most of you are familiar with this process, but basically on an annual basis we need to do audit. We have to do it every year, and there's three areas that we need to express an opinion on or to conclude on. The third one is the set of financial statements, and we need to indicate whether it's being presented or not. Then we also look at compliance, whether there's compliance with relevant laws and regulations that we test, and then in terms of the performance information that has been reported, whether it's reliable, whether it's accurate, and whether it is easy to understand specific as well. So that is the three areas that we'll focus on an annual basis. The different audit opinions, the first one is the green one that we refer to as the PIN audit. It is where your financial statement is financially unqualified, so it's easy to present. There's no findings on compliance and there's no findings on performance information. So in the entire set of audit, there wasn't anything material that we had to raise and include in the audit report. Then the next one is the financially unqualified opinion with findings. So you will still have a fairly presented set of financial statements, but there can either be findings on performance information or on compliance. And then the qualified opinion, that is where there is an amount in the said financial statement or amounts where we say except for instance at NRCS, except for the revenue, the rest of the financial statement is fairly presented. And I'm not going to go to the other is adverse and the claim. In the portfolio, we're fortunate enough to don't have any of those in this portfolio. So if we look at, and we stand a bit still on page 8, in terms of the actual audit outcomes, you can see that over 3 years, there was a steady improvement in terms of the audit outcomes. And that is really contributed to the fact that the Minister embraced the clean audit aspect. He's driving that. They've been, the entities have been diligent in preparing quarterly financial statements. It's admitted, it's reviewed. They have action plans in place, like where there's previous entities that wasn't clean, that action plans that they've monitored, they've implemented what is in the action plan, and it's actually, at the end of the day, delivered in terms of results. So if you look at the number of clean audits, we can see that there's a significant improvement since the previous year. Last year, there was 33 entities, which was the three entities that was clean, and this year we actually sit with 6 entities. 3 that maintained their clean audit outcome, and 3 that improved. And the 3 that improved was the National Gambling Board, the Lotteries Commission, and the Company Tribunal. Yes. So that's all the 3. The other is that SABS, NCD, and NCR was able to maintain their clean. Then we have SIPC and NCC, they were financially unqualified, so financial statements is very presented, but they did have findings in terms of non-compliance. So that is why they are sitting in the yellow block, indicating that they still need to do a bit more in terms of focusing on an action plan, moving in terms of getting controls in place to make sure that the financial statements that they submit is accurate, and in terms of succeed, monitoring and make sure that they clean irregular expenditure. And then the last one is NRCF. It's the only one in the portfolio that was qualified. It is the same qualification than in the past 2-3 years, where it links to the revenue. They have made improvement. I mean, there was a task team combined with the department with that working on this matter. And what we found in the past is that the database that they've used to raise the levies was incomplete. This year when we went in, we could see that the database has been attended to, is more complete. When the inspectors go out and they inspect in terms of the importers, they raise the importers that is not on the list, but there's still a bit of a gap between what the inspectors found and the communication to the finance department. So now the finance department need to pick up on this and say, okay, if we identify importers that is not registered, we need to follow up in terms of the levy that we raise, we need to send out that invoices, and we need to collect that revenue. So that is the missing link. It is linking to the design qualification, but we definitely see an improvement in terms of moving in the right direction. When you look at the compliance findings, it's the middle up there over the 3 years. Same picture, there's a continuous improvement in terms of the number of non-compliance or the fact that there is more compliance within the entity. Once again, the sixth entity that was cleaned didn't have any non-compliant findings. At CIPC, there was a non-compliant finding in terms of not being able to prevent irregular expenditure. In RCA, I think there are findings in terms of repairing financial statements and also irregular expenditure. And then NCC. At NCC, they really need to look at the controls around preparing their financial statements. This year there was a significant amount that they had to correct in terms of the set of financial statements that they submitted to us on 31st of May compared to the final set of financial statements. So if they haven't corrected those misstatements or the errors in the initial set of financial statements, they were likely to have been qualified at the end of the audit. And then one of the very positive pictures here is in terms of the performance information. When you look at the SMART criteria, whether the indicators are specific, measurable, achievable, all of the entities met that criteria. So there was no findings in terms of how the indicators were prepared and predetermined before the beginning of the year. When you look at the reliability, because then we will go in and say, if you report 10, is the evidence to support the 10? When we tested that, all the evidence was there and we could verify the accuracy and the completeness of the information that is reported by these entities in their annual report. But then move on. I mean, these improvements is really as a result of the internal controls and the processes that the entities had in place to make sure that they are in a position to deliver and report accurately at the end of the financial year. So if you look at the key control status and the key control environment, these three areas that we look at, it's leadership, financial and performance management, and then governance. In terms of leadership, I always say, you know, that's the tone from the top. It is the monitoring, it's making sure the resources are there, it's making sure the action plans are there, it's implemented, it's monitored, and when it's deviated from these actions to correct. It's making sure that IT governance strategies are in place. And in general, we can see that those are in place. There was no regressions, there was overall improvement. And then three of the entities we've seen the same level of control that has been there in the previous. I think the one that is standing, or the three that is standing out is at sea, and that is linking to the controls and monitoring around the irregular expenditure that we've identified there. NRCS is still linking to the qualification. I mean, they still need to improve in terms of getting up to the qualification, making sure the controls are there, and therefore they need the leadership guidance and the leadership interaction. And then at NCC, as I said, the set of financial statements this year really needed specific attention, and specifically around policies and procedures, we've identified that they need to put some focus in correcting that. Then in terms of the financial and performance management, that is the day-to-day activities, the control that is in within finance section, within the where we collect information for performance information. So that is really the crux of everything to make sure that if we have the documents there, if we monitor the action plans, at the end of the day, our monthly information is accurate, our quarterly information is accurate, and then we can report accurate. We found that in terms of NRCS, that we still need some attention and intervention required in terms of being able to have regular accurate information. And then at NCC, proper record keeping, and also in terms of the design of the IT system. When it comes to governance, it's our IT risk identification, our internal audit, risk identification and audit quality. Overall, all audit qualities are functioning well. They monitor what they should monitor, they follow up, they give recommendations to management, and it assists and it's aligned to the outcome that is seen in terms of the DTI portfolio. The one area where we did not make some reference to concerning area is for NCC, and it's specific in terms of the risk identification and the internal audit. What we found with them is, even though the internal audit did some work, when we as external came in, we found findings on procurement. They did the same contract, the same process, but unfortunately they didn't get the same findings. So what you're saying, when Eaton Audit is there and they do their job, I mean, they should do it to assist management. They should identify these people so that management are empowered to improve their controls and strengthen their controls. And it shouldn't be dependent on external audit coming in at the end. Then assurance providers are provided per level. We know that we look at the three tiers, which is first of all the first level, that is the senior management, accounting officer and executive authority. Second level is internal audit and audit committee. And at the third level, we're looking at the portfolio committee. So the first level is really your first line of defense. And so it's in majority, they're doing it and they're providing the assurance that is necessary. It's all the same three entities that we're referring to, say, from management side, from the accounting authority side. There needs to be a bit more attention to make sure that when you give assurance, when you do your monthly and quarterly monitoring, that you follow through, that you make sure the action plans are implemented, that you do get the desired results, and not just have an action plan for the sake of having an action plan, but really make sure that it's implemented and that you get the right result from what you wanted to achieve from it. Second level, internal audit, I've already referred to NCC and what we found there. And then in terms of the audit committee and portfolio committee, what we say, in terms of your specific and the audit committee's specific role, we can see that there's really the monitoring there, following up on the action plans, following up with entities to make sure that what should happen does happen, that there's a report back, and at the end of the day we can also see it in the outcome of this portfolio. If we look at the performance information, all that this slide is telling us is what is the program that we audited for the entity and if there was fines in terms of usefulness and reliability. And we can see that for all of them, there was no findings. And it leads back to the initial slide where we said this portfolio is doing extremely well in terms of planning and monitoring the performance information. We then go to the financial management, and this is in terms of non-compliance. If we start with figure one, we're saying that in terms of findings for compliance, there's also overall improvement. The first one that we do want to highlight is material mistakes in terms of financial statements. We see that from four entities in 2014-15, it improved to one, which is NCC in this financial year. We raised the finding of material mistakes that had to be corrected. Prevention of unauthorized and irregular interest in vascular expenditure. We can also see a steady improvement, especially from the 13-14 year going up to the 14-15 and 15-16 year. We do have three entities where we identified that they didn't have enough control to prevent irregular expenditure, and that is NCC, NCRS, and then CFE. And then management and procurement of the management of contracts. There, we can also see for the current year, 15-16, there was no entity where we had to report that they don't manage a contract. So what we're saying is once you went through a fair process of appointing a service provider, you still have the obligation to monitor and track your contract that you have in place. Just make sure that the deliverables bills that you've agreed on is being delivered on and that you stay within your contract round. And as I say, controls in this environment and in this portfolio is pretty strong and they don't have to report anything. 15-16. In terms of figure 2, when it comes to supply chain specific findings, and we look at uncompetitive and unfair procurement, we can see the same trend of improvement. This year there was only two entities where we reported in terms of unfair and uncompetitive bidding processes. So typically they won't get necessary free quotations, or if it's a tender, they might not have followed the tender process. And the two entities that we raised to find there was NCC and NRCS. And in terms of qualification areas, that is NRCS, and as I explained in the beginning, it's linked to the revenue finding that has been there for the last 3 years. If we look at figure 4, it's only telling us to say, the set of financial statements that we've received, if we would have concluded on that set of financial statements, what would have the outcome would have been? And if we look at that without any corrections, there would have been two entities that were qualified, and that would have been included NCC. At the end of the audit of the corrections that was made, that could have been made, it was only NRCS that remained qualified. And we can see that there's also steady improvement from the previous year. If we look at unauthorized fruits and waste expenditure in a bit more detail, if we look at unauthorized expenditure, unauthorized expenditure is really where expenditure is incurred outside the mandate or where a program is being exceeded or in payments made in excess of what was approved. There was nothing in terms of the entity, so those amounts are zero over the last 3 years. When we look at business and wasteful expenditure, it is where expenditure was made in vain, could have been prevented, and also very well done in terms of this portfolio where there was no fruitless and wasteful expenditure and where it was controlled and prevented to make sure that it doesn't occur. Then if you look at irregular expenditure, and I think we've discussed it, we can see the improvement there. In terms of land amount, it's reduced from 39 million to 17 million. And this includes, besides NGS and NCC, where we said that there was not fair competitive bidding process, this also includes subsidy. I think the regular expenditure because the base that they used to calculate salary increases was incorrect. So they actually overpaid some of the employees. So that still needs to be investigated and then the appropriate steps taken by the senior management in the entity. Then in terms of the last column, we refer to UIF, but it's actually for unauthorized, irregular and fruitless expenditure. So afterwards I've realized the abbreviation can be misleading. That's referring to the such of expenditure. And what we're saying there is look into investigations and where there was irregular expenditure, it has been investigated or investigations already started in all instances, except for subsidy, we are still need to investigate and follow through on the overpayment of salaries. And then we're almost to the end where we look at the root causes, what is driving the outcome for the portfolio. First of all, we can also see because we're moving close to 100% clean audit outcomes, the root causes is really in the 50s and 20% and there's also improvement in the areas. So slow response, we are saying that in terms of what we know and the risk that we've identified, in some instances there might have been quicker reaction and quicker responses to make sure that at the end of the year we could have managed to clean some of the findings. Like gambling boards and Potteries Commission updated. I mean, they took the findings from the previous year, they acted on it, and they managed to move into the green area. Instability and vacancies. This year there was no root cause linked to instability and vacancies, so what we're saying is capacity is there, the people are there, and they need to focus on the control areas. And then as of consequences, they will identify the one of the entities that there was still a lack of consequences in terms of making sure that what was previously reported on doesn't reoccur come forward. The minister made certain commitments, and you can see that all of the commitments are in progress, and all of these commitments assisted in driving the outcome of this portfolio as you see today. It focused on the implementation of action plans to address previous audit findings, the NRCS task team to focus on the revenue, a follow-up and quarterly key control assessments, compiling quarterly financial statements, and then obtain an action plan from NCC to address the findings of predetermined objectives. And as you said, there was no entity this year that had any findings on predetermined objectives. There's one new commitment from the minister side, and that's relating to C, where it is saying that there should be an investigation to determine who is responsible for the overpayment on salaries at C. And then just lastly, in terms of portfolio committee and the areas that we propose and what the committee has been doing in the past is to focus and monitor on the quarterly plans, the action plan, and to follow up where these disciplinary actions required to follow up on those actions and make sure that these implemented. Thank you, and I think that is from my side the feedback on the DCI portfolio for 15-16.
Thank you very much, Ms. Margaret, on that presentation. And I'm not sure if your colleague wishes to add anything. They're smiling right, okay. Now, just to remind members who may have just joined us that the DTI itself is not covered here, only as entity, because the DTI hasn't been signed off yet, and it's not yet tabled. Therefore, we're not engaging with that one. I hope I'm correct. Now, over to ourselves to engage with the Auditor General. Fine. We have the Honourable Mkongi, followed by the Honourable Williams, the Honourable Kurnov, and the Honourable Hill Lewis, in that order. Thank you. And let's look at this stage at 4 minutes max.
Lord, thank you very much. Firstly, I think it is very important for us to welcome the presentation from the Office of the Auditor General on the entities of the Department of Trade and Industry. But equally, I think it's very important for us as members of Parliament to recognize that there is a general improvement in the functions of the entities of the TTI. And if we agree that there is a general improvement in the functions and accountability of these entities, that necessarily means we as a committee we need to applaud and welcome that positive move. Equally so, we need as a committee to say that more needs to be done, especially on two entities that constantly are improving but not steadily improving. We have been told about the NRCS, we have been told about the question of the National Consumer Commission. So even if there is an improvement, but we need a speedy improvement. Why we need this speedy improvement? Because if there is lack of such small improvement, there is a problem also with safe delivery, which is becoming a challenge. One, we have raised it in terms of the border management, in terms of the paperwork, and so forth. And that can risk the community of getting goods that are of quality. So this is what I'm trying to raise the question, that generally there is improvement, and then we need to welcome that. But I want to go on the question of the overpayment of salaries that we have raised. I'm not sure whether it's an accounting word that I want to use. Whether is this a mispayment, or is a deliberate remuneration of a friend, or what? What is this thing of this overpayment? Because we must be clear how this happens. Because there are people who have been a salary scale, and the date of payment per month, and everyone for planning and other people know how much they are eligible to earn. So what is this overpayment? Is it part and parcel of the rules and regulations of TTI and its entities to charge these people overpayments? But what is this all about? So I want to really know about that part of the overpayment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mkongi.
So is there any recovery plan? For example, if you say this overpayment, it was a mistake, how are we going to recover that? Thank you very much.
And perhaps I should add, does the BFMA indicate who bears that responsibility, or is it opaque? Thank you. Honourable Williams?
Thank you, Chairperson. First, I just want to welcome the report. And then I just want to talk specifically to slide number 9. On the left-hand side of slide number 9, it's talking about the status of key controls, leadership, financial and performance management, and then at the bottom, governance. I just want to know, when it comes to things like the NGC, there on the financial and performance management, there's a little red dot with a down arrow. I'd like to know, does that mean that this is getting worse? So last year, these findings were much better. And I just want to know to what extent that little red dot with the arrow going down, you know, has it gone down by 50%? Has it gone down by 90%? I mean, we don't know. It could only be a slight drop from what it was last year. So I just want some clarity on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Colonel.
Thank you, Chair. There's not much that I can add to what was asked about the, so we call it the terrible twins, you know, NRCS and NGC. But there is progress in terms of the NRCS and so in sub-C, you know, if we look where Sabina was 3 years ago and where it is now, it is quite an improvement. But what I want to ask the Auditor General, you know, sometimes when the NGC comes here, you know, you see there are trouble. There is problems, you know, there is. So that is a departmental duty to make sure that is happening. But if you have found over 2 years that there is some sort of a pattern, apart from giving this to the department and the minister, do you engage in a way that you can train entities or departments from the Auditor General's point of view to make sure it's not happening? Or is it all over, back to business for the DTI to do it?
Thank you very much, Honourable Gronholm. Honourable Hill-Lewis.
I think this is more a question to the DTI. The AG's office reports that there has been some regression in the category lack of consequences for poor performance and transgressions. And I just would like the DTI's comment on why that is. It's very important that there are appropriate consequences for people who break the rules. Thank you.
Honourable Hill-Lewis, Honourable McPherson. No, the Auditor General is here, and of course the question you asked may well have been answered, and they'll tell you, but you have at least had the reports, you know, the quarterlies of some of the entities, not all of them, but some of them, have you not? And therefore I would advise you, you may ask those questions or make comments therein. Thank you very much, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Montash.
So, person, when they state that there's been non-compliance or overpayment on sellers in some entities, who in their opinion has to pay for that overpayment?
Thank you very much, Honourable Montash. I have a couple of queries myself, or perhaps comments. If I look at slide 9, and if I go to, I suppose, the earlier one, slide 8, we see on the left the 3-year trend overall improvement in audit outcomes. And the purple there will talk about qualified findings throughout that period. The issue would be, is this the same issue throughout the period? And then we do come to the compliance with key legislation, and we see some of the same entities coming up repeatedly. We're also concerned that the NCC, which started off in a very difficult situation 3 or 4 years ago, then there was regular improvement, can I put it that way, and we are conscious and concerned as to the slippage that can occur. And it would appear as if there is some slippage beginning. You know, 56, there were 78, 56, and 33% in all of the entities. We acknowledge that. But when one goes to page 9, and you talk about the status of key controls, key would, I imagine, mean these are controls you must comply with. Because if you don't, it's going to lead to a very serious consequence. In other words, they are alert, alarm bells, which you should not ignore. Now, if we look at that, and we see now under policies and procedures, the NCC, I was under the impression that these policies and procedures were now on track. That's the impression I got in the last couple of years. We're getting there, putting the policies in place. What is missing? Because then, because of no procedures or insufficient procedures in place, we then see proper record keeping a challenge. Well, tell me, are they keeping, adopting a manual form of record keeping and filing? Or is this a computerized one? Because I see at the bottom is the design and implementation of IT, which to me, there was a relationship then between the record keeping. It was not undertaken then by IT, and that system somehow is not adequate, or the people utilizing it are not competent. What's the problem there? And then we move to, it says intervention required, you see. And then we go across to that by chance block assurance providers per level. And I always worry about the internal audit, notwithstanding that I see, well, it's just one. Nevertheless, that is the first, you know, a major chance, opportunity to check and say, there's something wrong here. They don't do internal once a year audit. The way I understand this internal audit committee, it's monthly, and if not monthly, quarterly. So what's going on here? Because I heard you say they are functioning. Now, if I'm functioning, is it because I don't know what I'm functioning about? What is the purpose of my functioning? What are the key issues that I should be taking into account? And then, I think it was slide 15. Try to just get that. On slide 15, I was really impressed with this issue of improvements in compliance with legislation and quality of financial statements to see in this year, 2015-2016, management of procurement and or contracts. Fantastic, because this is very important, and it's great news to get this from the Auditor General's office. Very good news. But then we move to finding, you know, figure two, findings on compliance with key supply chain, is that right? Measures, qualifications, the 10% on the revenue, which makes me think this is related to the NRCS, because we have that further on page 16. Now, exactly why, in the Auditor General's opinion, are we having a challenge with the NRCS in terms of record keeping on these exports? Because this would appear to be a three-year challenge. So in the Auditor General's opinion, where are we in that regard? And then I see on that next page 16, that there's also the SIP, which we've heard about, and the NCC. But I'd really like to know, the NCC, are they doing some manual filing and cases are misfiled? What's the actual problem here? And as I said about the revenue, you know what you're doing, surely. There's, if you're exporting, that becomes a key determinant in the current account, which is a very serious figure that we all take into account, and the government especially is concerned with that. And then if we look at your top three and root causes, and what analyzes this here, yes, no doubt there is an improvement. I think Honourable Mkongi made the statement. There is an improvement. No doubt about it. But I don't want chronic issues remaining on board. After 3 years, why can't we deal with a chronic problem? Why not? Tell me. Do we need another specialist here? Thank you. Over to the Office of the Auditor General. And Director General, we will come to you after the Auditor General for any further comments you may wish to add.
Thank you, Jim. In terms of the overpayment of salaries,
the problem is, and we are having problems with recordings, would you talk into the mic? I know you don't have a ready voice, so that's why it's even more important.
Thank you. In terms of the overpayments of salaries at CIPC, it's not something that just happened. It was part of the annual salary increases. So when they calculated the increase, they used the incorrect base. So that included some allowances that they should have included to calculate the increase. It's very difficult for me to say who should pay back and what should be paid back. That's exactly the reason why the minister said it must be investigated to determine who is responsible and then to determine what is the appropriate action to follow and to collect when necessary and from whom. But that will be determined by the investigation. And as we said, in terms of the committees, I think that's one of the things that the committee should then focus on to follow up in terms of the progress of this investigation and the outcome of this investigation. The PMA actually just says that where there's irregular expenditure, it should be investigated and appropriate actions taken. So it's also not prescriptive to say who should pay back or who should do action. But it is saying there should be investigation and there should be correct action. And then the governance of the NCC, we're talking about the regression that we've seen there. Yes, it's a regression. I mean, the said financial statement that we've seen this year was worse than what we've seen last year, and therefore we said that there's a regression specifically in terms of the financial and management key controls, and there's a regression in terms of governance. It's difficult to say what is the percentage of regression, but if I look at the colors, for governance, it moves to yellow, that we are saying it is concerning. So, yes, the controls are there, but it needs to be enhanced, and it can result in worse outcomes next year. When it's red, we really say the intervention is required, and they can't let it be as it is. We need to look at record keeping, and I'm going to look at the department because unfortunately I'm not sure whether they use a manual system or whether they use an electronic system, or maybe Tulani knows, I don't know. But whatever system they have, they need to make sure that their record is available, it's maintained, it's kept in a manner that can be retrieved, and they support information that they report on, either in the financial statements, in terms of the performance information, it was accurate, but it needs to be available, it needs to be accurate to support. Then if we look at the patterns, and there was a question to ask that, do we engage from outside of the office? Yes, we do engage, we do offer to present workshops to assist in terms of recommendations. So we are available if they need us to come and sit down with them and talk them through the internal controls and where they need to improve and where we think they can enhance, we are available to assist in that. Then NRGS, the qualification, is it the same issue? In my view, yes, it links to revenue, although, as I said, there is improvement. Initially, when it started off, we said that we can't test completeness of revenue because you don't have a database, you don't maintain it. We see that when we go to the inspection on the ground, we see that there is importers that should have been on the database that isn't there, and there was a bigger problem. At least the database has been addressed. They've worked on that. What we now see is that from what they get on the ground, from where they do the inspections, they don't make that final link to finance. So that information to say, these are your list of importers, these are the people that should pay levies, must go to finance, and finance should actually issue those invoices, track that payment, and make sure that they collect it. So for me, it's the last step in completing the cycle. So I think if they do that, and if they work with a matter of urgency on that, they could move out of disqualification in due course. Assurance provided, there was a question to say what went wrong. If we look at senior management, where there is not legal controls, it's really that day-to-day, making sure the documentation is available, making sure that there is reconciliation, that the cash counts are being done, that there is monitoring and review by senior management. I mean, we have people that's doing the actual job, but then we have monitoring and review. And it's all those key things that need to be in place to make sure once I file a document, it's accurate, the supporting documentation is there, it's recorded in the way that it should be done. So that is really, for me, it's about the discipline to make sure that a daily activity is done 100% and accurate so that the information is available. And then in terms of the internal audit, for me, it might also come back in terms of the discipline, as you said, the people are there, they qualify, they're skilled, they looked at the same work, and at the end of the day, they didn't identify the same findings. It could have been interpretation, but once again, there is monitoring, there is review, there is supervision. And as I said, internal audit is there, internal audit is a support to management. They need to help management, and they should be an early detection tool so that management can work on the key controls to say, I've got a problem with record keeping, I've got a problem in terms of supply chain and following processes.
So where can I enhance quality controls? And then NRCF, I think we spoke about NRCF. And then it was the chronic, I think it was about the root causes and the chronic nature of it. I think the root causes just talk to the audit outcomes, and we do see improvement. Where we still talk about slow response, it's just important to push it into NRCF and NCC to say, we're already 6 months within the financial year. We can't wait longer. We need to make sure that those outstanding actions is being done, that we enhance our control, that we monitor, so that at the end of this financial year, we are ready. If that's not the case, I mean, then there should be some consequence management to say, we can't keep on dragging this and not move into the clean space, because it's not impossible. This portfolio has demonstrated that it is possible in all instances, that it is possible. So they just need to put their head to it and focus to make sure that they act on the matters that has been identified as quickly and as swiftly as possible, monitor it, and make sure that they do get the outcome that is desired. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Myberg. Can we just turn to the DTI, DG, Mr. October?
Yes, thanks. I think the question to the DTI relates to the lack of improvement and the lack of consequences, as it was said, and the entity that really there has been regression in is NCC, National Consumer Commission. As was indicated last week by our GCOO, is that what we've tried to do is over the years constantly improved our monitoring and evaluation of our entities. So that's why we firstly established the agency management unit. We also have regular interaction between the minister and all the entities, where we go through the audit outcomes, we go through, and the minister has indicated, as we on the campaign to ensure that we try to get clean audits in all entities and so on. So,
sorry, DG, did you say you've not established in the DTI an entity management unit?
No, we've got, I'll come to that, but we the agency management unit has been established over the past few years, and as it that actively oversees the entities. Now, as you know, especially with the NCC, and at you start with a number of entities have resisted robust oversight by the DTI. Many of the accounting officers, because these entities also have the accounting officers, which is equal status to myself as the accounting officer of the DTI, they claim they are also the accounting officers of their entities, and they don't accept our oversight of the DTI. So, fortunately, we solved that problem with the NCC, where there was active resistance. So what we found in the NCC is that there was a lack of strong systems in the NCC, both from management side, but also a very weak internal audit function, and a very weak audit committee. I think under the previous commission at the NCC, even though the committee took a number of years to be established, it didn't meet regularly, and so on. So the best interaction we have been having with the NCC is for them to put these systems in place. Proper strong audit committees, and then proper and strong internal audit function. Where we find there has been retrogression still is that what was found out is that even when their own internal audit didn't identify a number of weaknesses, which was then subsequently discovered by the Auditor General. So that has been reported to the Minister. What the Minister has also established to ensure oversight of these committees is we now have regular meetings with the chairs of all the audit committees of these entities. As you know, every entity has their own internal audit committee. We've got our own audit committee, which oversees only the DTI. The DTI's audit committee does not have powers over the entities. So what we have established now is a meeting of all the audit chairs of the DTI's entities. And I also interact with the minister now. So the minister can directly meet with his entities. I think we're probably the only department government who does this. So that is what, but as I said, there is still work outstanding with regards to the NCC, and what we have asked them to do is to really appoint a strong internal audit function and not only rely on outsourcing this function. So that is one of the mechanisms we're going to do to ensure better performance by NCC with regards to this finding.
Thank you very much, Director General. I'm turning back to the committee. Is there any area you'd like to further interrogate or engage on? No? There are one or two areas that I mean, the DG has just referred to now, in which I thought perhaps you would share with us the list of these entities that find it difficult to cooperate, the accounting officers, or have interpreted the perhaps rulings, etc., with respect to governance, and that is they do not need to account to the DGI or whatever. You mentioned in particular, though, this did not apply to the NCC, for example. It has been this cooperation, and hence you've been able to exercise this support for them in a particular way, strategic manner. But you did refer to other entities that were not, perhaps the word to use is cooperative. And after all, our governance is based on cooperative governance, which is one of the few clauses in our constitution which define it as unique. Perhaps you could expand on that, DG.
I think it's really partly history, because as you know, there was a number of entities which openly did not want to report to the department. It was the previous emission of the NGC. It was also the National Gambling Board, and so on. Fortunately, as we said, we did take action against those commissioners. There has been a number of court cases with them. All of those court cases we have won, but we have as I said, the department and the minister have acted decisively against all these CEOs or commissioners, and I think for the public record, as I said, currently now there's very strong cooperation from all the entities, and as I said, we also have now a system even of the audit chairs as well, and so on. So there is that cooperation. It's our question of putting the systems in place and actively implementing new systems, but I think there is now cooperation from all our entities. And you could see there with the AGB, as you know, we had court cases with the National Gambling Board. We also had the CIPC, which had qualified audit for a number of years. All of that has been improved.
Yes, I think perhaps just to refresh our minds, there are certain entities that are not audited by the AG, and that's the NEF, for example, NAMESA, I'm just saying this in case the DG, I make a mistake, the DG can acknowledge, ECIC, that's an export one, isn't it, and SONUS. And it would be helpful to us, DG, because this is a new committee, relatively new with members, why are these not audited by the AG? I know why they are, but perhaps you can share specifically why they aren't. And then to come to the third aspect, there was a decision taken or a position adopted by the DDI, which you shared this with us 2 years ago, and that's when we first came in the fifth term, that they really, the goal of the Minister of DDI, Dr. Rob Davies, was to try and see that these various entities were rationalized in some manner. Now, we haven't really had any further progress report on that position. As I say, I didn't see it as a decision, but something that the DGI would like to move towards, as it were. And you may be able to cast some light on that. I also, the little I understand is that it's to do with some of the trading accounts. But if we could get just a clarity on those that we know are not audited by the AD. and how these entities have performed, would you be able to tell us this, seeing as they were not audited by the auditor general? Thanks. Over to Mr. Carr.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Chairperson, there are certain audits that are not performed by the AG's office. I think my colleagues will expand on it. It's in terms of the public audit act, which the AG opts not to perform. In fact, they call them Section 43 audits. And there are a number of reasons why the AG's office do not perform the audits. Some of it may be resource constraints. But these audits, what the AG's office normally does is, although they do not audit it, they still have adequate oversight from the AG's office over these auditors to ensure that the auditors cover the fundamental three areas, which is the annual financial statements, performance management, and compliance reporting. So this is covered. In fact, some of the audits that are not performed by the AG's office, some of the outcomes, I've seen some of the annual reports. Some of them are doing extremely well. For example, the ECIC, which has got a clean audit. The NEF has got a clean audit as well. So we've seen quite a large number of those entities also receiving clean audits. So I think that's the reason why some of the audits are not performed by the AG's office.
DG?
Just to answer the question of the entities, as you can see, there's been a progressive movement away from the situation of what was before, which was basically you had all these entities having their own independent boards, and all of these boards claiming that they are independent of government. And they confuse themselves as if they would have denied institutions. So as I said, what we've gone away from is, and as I said, that was an excuse then to get away from oversight. And that is why we saw lots of corruption happening, a failure to deliver and not to account for it and so on. As you know, we have moved away from boards and we have appointed what we call regulators. So for example, the LCS used to have a board. And now they just have a regulator, like a department that's an accounting officer, CIPC and so on. And then we've also brought a number of them under the DTI as trading entities, which means they have full independence with regard to their regulatory function. They must perform that without fear or favor, like the BEE commissioner, for example. But when it comes to administration, they must report and must be under the control of the department and the minister especially. So we're saying there's no independence with regards to administration and finances. That is strictly monitored and controlled, but you have free independence in terms of your decisions as a regulator or as a commissioner and so on. So we have been moving in RCS, a number of entities are now no longer independent boards. As you know, the National Gambling Board, that will be the other one. But as you know, you had the National Gambling Board. We used to oversee, now we're going to have just a gambling regulator. And then, and as you know before, there was a court case between the gambling board where it refused to accept some of the decisions of the minister, and you had that kind of conflict. So, as I said, in most of our entities now, we are moving away from that sort of unnecessary independence.
Well, thank you, DG. As I recall, then, there are 13 entities, am I correct? They come under the Department of Trade and Industry. And overall, clearly, been said already, there has been this overall improvement in the entities. It would appear that the Office of the Auditor General can correct me, or the DG, only three of these entities were required to improve their performance, as I understand. And that would be, you know, when one's looking at this, we've already said the CRPC, the NRCS, and the NCC. The only reason why we focused a little on the NCC is because it has been an intensive care in a previous term and, you know, managed to climb out of that, etc. And we certainly don't want it to slip back. So it's a matter of watching, tracking, and monitoring how they do. But that is a great, you know, from the Portfolio Committee, we are very pleased to see and hear about these improvements. But I think we'd be a lot happier if the NRCS is able to get the information at its raw source, the inspectors who collect that data,
And yet whoever is meant to compile this information and to tap it into the computer or whatever, to do that, and it appears to me that that leg of the journey does need a lot of improvement. We don't want to see it again. I mean, that's what we're saying, because it's been chronic now. And we can see it's not a difficult thing, I imagine, to address, or doesn't appear to be, because you've got the information. That's how I see it. You've got it. It's just not getting into the system as effectively as it should. But on that note, then, I look at members, and clearly, you know, they are very preoccupied with other issues, which means that, as far as they are concerned, they are satisfied with our engagement. And I'm looking at you, members. All of you are. Good. That's what I like to hear. Yes, Ms. Khan?
Chair, just last comment. The comment earlier by the teacher about the agency management unit. This is a model which we've adopted and we've implemented a few years ago. In fact, National Treasury, which is going to issue its new regulations, the Treasury regulations, which issued in terms of the PFMA, they're also going to adopt a very similar framework or model for all departments to manage the public entities in a very similar manner. So this is something which we've seen increasing in government to increase its oversight over the public entities. So it's something that will become law going forward as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Khan. As you know, members, if we had many problems, I'm quite certain we would have needed this other half an hour. And clearly, the challenges we've been able to identify have not consumed the time we allocated. At the beginning of the meeting, in my opening, I pointed to the item on the colloquium report, which should have been distributed on Friday, which has not been distributed, and is only ready today for me to look at. And I will come to that in a minute, because I do need to thank the Office of the Auditor General, both officers here with us today. We have, is it Mr. Giulani and Moyo, Mr. Moyo and Ms. Meiber, thank you. You're welcome to stay. And the DG, Trade and Industry, is the line of October, and I think it's the CFO, Mr. Barr. That's right. Now, we're just making some comments about the colloquium report. You're very welcome to stay, but this is an unexpected early adjournment we will be having. Now, on this colloquium report, as I say, I need to go through it. I've just received it now, right now. And looking at this, some of the points I would have made would have been, we've got the terms of reference, all of that is quite clear, the different apologies we had, and the findings. In particular, you know, the OEMs, which are of interest to the DG, I'm sure, and the different success stories that may have been noted, General Electric is one of them. The localization challenges, have we covered them? So when you get this yourself, when it's distributed, which will be today, I'd like you to study this. And if you identify some real hole, this was raised, it's not covered, please immediately communicate with the PC Secretary. In this case, it would be Mr. Malema. Mr. Malema. And Mr. Malema, your email is the parliamentary one, is it? Right. Mr. Malema has pointed out that some of the emails that have been forwarded to him are not really responsive. The information is kept back. And I think that he's going to be speaking to one or two of you in this regard. The technical issue is just being kicked back, even that he sends it. You also need to look at ETI's key priorities. Was the colloquium in line with this, indeed? Or was it fruitless expenditure? Because it does cost a lot. Why didn't we achieve the 75% localization target, etc.? And we know to that end, the Auditor General did also come with respect to the verification issues and the cost thereof. which quite frankly we still haven't taken a decision on. And this committee will make a recommendation in that regard. The continued impact of negative impact on manufacturing and export of electricity and port tariffs, although the port tariffs have been adjusted for manufactured goods, and I'm looking straight at the DG, I'm sure this is the case in the previous term, they nevertheless remain too high, it would appear. And then we had this whole presentation by the China North and the China South, which told us they are one entity and that should collapse all their commitments. Well, should it collapse all their commitments? Or do you add up the commitments and it is still X and not less? I don't know. And these are questions we're going to want to ask the DGI in this regard, but also public enterprises in this regard. I think it's public enterprises, isn't it? Right. The other, and we've got those two. Then the other one was, of course, the BP. Now, who was this? This was Bombardier. And I remember Bombardier of old when we started off at Hard King and I was chairing finance and economic affairs. And if I recall, they were then a French company, a Canadian company. I don't know if their shareholding has expanded. And I'm going to be asking Mr. Medina to try and get a list of their directors. I want to know exactly what the structure is. Or is it entirely Canadian with an operating in a joint, what they call it, venture of some sort. The other issues which you may want this Transnet, the whole issue around the localization there. And then FASA. Now, the PRASA, there were huge issues around the verification costs, etc. And I'm not sure if we got to the bottom of that. We may wish to write directly to the Minister of, I'm just thinking, is it transport industry or PRASA? Is it? Yes, I'm sure, right. And the General Electric before that. And the localization, there are some questions, and I raise this, it says, BPI has always been considerably taking into account the issue of transformation, etc., through regulations and acts such as broad-based black economic empowerment, the Black Industrialist Program, the Enterprise and Supply Development. The DTI offered to respond to the question on the percentage of black suppliers during the next sitting of the committee on the 18th of August. I don't know if the DTI ever got this information from us, you see, to see if they could have responded. So I think we need to officially write to the DTI in this regard, but just for your own information in DG, it was the DGI offered to respond to the question on the percentage of black suppliers during the next sitting. And that was with respect to the Black Industrialization Program and the Enterprise Supply Development in relationship to the broad-based black economic empowerment piece of legislation and the scorecard, etc. Then the investment uncertainty points were made on the delay of a project at Ekurhuleni. That one is the Ekurhuleni Training Center project had been delayed and would be ready in June 2017. We need to, Mr. Medina, follow up on that. Is that still the case? Independent verification, and we've raised that already with respect to SAS as it then was. The resolution, in fact, The committee can't take a resolution in a colloquium. All it can do is make a recommendation to the committee. I hope that's clear. No, to the committee first. We must first adopt this report of the colloquium and engage on it as a committee. And then there'll be a resolution. So even though individuals may just call it a resolution, it is not a resolution. And then we need to say that that is the matter around verification, again, as we pointed out. And those present, the Honourable Glarco was still very much in operation at that time, and unfortunately he is now redeployed a little bit to the Portfolio Committee of Communications. It was a full list here who were present, and it may be pertinent for DTI to look at this list of people we engaged, and if, in their opinion, we may have overlooked someone who could have added value to this, they should please communicate with us in this regard. So we'll certainly let you have this. Then the one thing which I don't think was appreciated by the committee as such is, I think when an entity comes here, as happened with that, that entity needed to have met beforehand so that they're not having three people giving us three different positions. And that's not acceptable. Absolutely not. They need at least to be talking to each other so that they come with the same position to the committee. I mean, at this moment, I have to throw the dice to see which one is relevant. This is crazy. We want one position from that. The ISAC there, etc., the procurement, again, the details of the opinion, etc., the procurement instrument could be used with supply development instrument to rebuild South Africa's capabilities and rail, the OEN supply, etc. But as I said, we will be letting you have this, a copy of this report, DG, in this regard. A lot was made of the Buy America Act. They don't seem to have any problems with the World Trade Organization and the Buy America Act. Why are we having problems when we try to buy South Africa and try to persuade everyone to buy South Africa? The CSIR is a very good presentation, solidly represented, etc. But you'll have this to look at yourselves. The Office of the Auditor General was not captured. It should now be in there. Because they came last week, didn't they? And they heard in today, on very occasion, yeah, they are here on the 18th. Mr. Medina, I want this in today by 1 o'clock. The manufacturing circle, right? And the presentation by the Railroad Association. It was the first time I'd ever heard of this organization. Anyway, we did get a presentation. They also seem to have a lot to say, coming forward with possible solutions, which is always healthy when you complain. What do you suggest? What do you suggest after complaint? You will see there that this report will come without a conclusion. It will come without recommendations. And you are expected, first of all, to indicate that this report is an accurate reflection. So, you will get this afternoon, a copy. We will, looking at the program, Mr. Hitmans, when is the earliest we can now engage and consider this? Yes. So we're just looking up the program now. But if we look at the program which you all have, we're looking at Tuesday the 13th of September. Tuesday, I'm saying it's also for the DG because I think it would be a very good idea if DTI is represented here in some senior capacity as we go over this. Tuesday the 13th is the first consideration. Okay, the first. In that meeting, you will need to come with conclusions and recommendations from the committee members. Then it'll go back, and we'll get the following week, I hope, to consider and final. So it's virtually done, and I must say, I was not happy to learn that it will not be ready. But be that as it may, it's now, it's 10:30, Mr. Medina, you're going to now, you've got this copy in your computer. I'd like to see you in our office at 12, thanks. Yes, DG.
No, thanks. We will definitely participate when you deliberate next week on that. I think we will be here because we will be doing our annual report early in the day. And so, Madam Chair, I wanted to enlighten you about, I think there was this confusion around requirements for black economic empowerment. I think we must be very clear what we're talking about here. With regards to localization,
for every sector that we designate or that we enforce localization for is we do a search, we see what capabilities we have as a country, and then we specify a percentage to national treasury. So for example, with regards to clothing and textile, we did the research, we said we can do everything. So the requirement for designation is 100% of the clothing of South African Airways must be produced in South Africa, and the textiles must also be made here. With regards to, for example, locomotives or others, it will be 35%, 45%, 55%, depending on the sector. Right? So that, then, so that is, but the localization, as long as it's produced in South Africa, it can be produced by a German company, it can be produced by a white company, it can be produced by a B company. The only thing we want is that it must be produced in South Africa with local jobs. So please separate that out from completely from black economic empowerment. The black economic empowerment thing that you have endorsed as a committee is that we have set codes of good practice, which is public information. Everybody knows what you must do to get a level 1 BE score, to get a level 2 BE score, and so on. In, as you know, the biggest element now of black economic empowerment is what we call procurement and supply development. We actually created a new category in the BE codes, which specifies that you must bring not only BE companies to do your catering and to do your garden services, but to actually supply you with inputs into your production process and so on. So that it's not information that we can give for what you must do in rail, or in, it's a generic set of codes of good practice, which is common information. So that I just want to clarify, because it looks like you were trying to say you must see how much BE supplies you must have in the North-South rail contract. The only thing we will specify for that contract is the percentage of local content of the locomotive contracts, so like 55%, for example.
No, thank you very much. So now that they have merged, we have been informed. Yes, I will take that on, or Hill Lewis. What is the position, and perhaps...
Then it should be the 55 of the total. It must be whatever the total contract is, 55% of the total. Whether they... 2 or 5 companies, doesn't matter. It must be 55% of the total combined contract.
Now, thank you for that clarification, DG, and if you would also, you make reference now to the different percentages and the designations. And I know we've received this in passing on X and then again later on Y, but it would be very useful if the department could just give us a page on the percentage currently standing for each of these. That would be very helpful. Thank you. Yes, I see that. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Yes, it will be good before the 2020 Olympics, you can designate Olympic track suits, please.
Yeah, one of our top designers in the country can perhaps start working on that. All right, Honourable Mkongi.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure I need to go somewhere, but I know that we have dealt with. But I would like, when you come, page 5. 6.1.2.
What's the report?
On the minute.
No, that's been adopted. We can't get back on, I'm sorry. And you
no, no, I just wanted to say, on the issue of...
Just a minute, Honourable Mkongi. We're not getting back on the minutes. That I must make clear. So, if you want to raise something now before we close, but it's not on a colloquium, then just wait a minute. Because I want to close off the colloquium issue, you see? Right. And so on this then, you can see anything area, we need to make sure you do get this so that you're able to ask those who did appear before us as well, you know, and assist. I'm sure you'll do that automatically, DG.
Not to forget that at the meeting last week, you did agree with a meeting of the Auditor General's office that where there's a lack of compliance by entities to implement this program, they would be audited and it would be a finding against one for, like let's say, compliance with legislation and regulations. That this thing, so with regards to entities, there will be a finding if a company like Sascock will have to get a qualified audit because they did not source the tracksuits locally.
Thank you, DG. I was just looking because I remember that coming up. We had the minutes here, which we've adopted. There were two resolutions which the committee adopted. The one is exactly that regarding the Auditor General and that, or perhaps not exactly that, but this was compliance that we thought would come back here. And then the other issue was the status of industrial parks and the Black Industrialist Program. And to some extent you addressed the Black Industrialist Program, but provides the committee with a briefing on the status of industrial parks. Now, had we passed these minutes, and it was last week, we were there, I've written to you and said, in this meeting, can you please? But we haven't yet reached that stage. But we would appreciate that, and I think that was the decision which was taken. But again, we're going to link it to when you are here, DG, and not an extra meeting. I think that is clear. All right. So those are the minutes. Now that we have reached the end of my comments regarding the colloquium report and what you need to do when you get this report, and that we're having it on Wednesday the 13th September, Tuesday. Before I adjourn, is there anything a member would like to raise by Honourable Mkogi?
I think I thought you were dealing with minutes. Even if we're not dealing with minutes, we're dealing with colloquium. I think this matter still fits. Around the question of the Black industrialists, DG, and any other issue that is coming, I've been asking this question from the department that is not coming forth. The funding issue of the Black industrialists has come up. And it has been there now for 2 months that people are saying that it's fronting. So maybe when you are coming, maybe you must clarify the comment about that particular thing. There is that particular room.
And that, can I advise, can also be raised during the annual report process itself, which will be here shortly. But it's useful that the DG has already has an idea what we will pursue with respect to that. But the secretary has just pointed out, the committee secretary, Mr. Hermans, that there is a possible opportunity, but I see formal consideration of BRRR will be happening on Wednesday the 21st of September. It's also possible for us then to do an update and more status on the industrial parks on Wednesday the 21st. So we could put that formally to you, DG, on that particular matter, because that is the 21st. Other days, I really can't see it happening. The 14th will be a very busy day, and so will the following Tuesday. We'll have the consideration of the first draft of the BRRR, which will be a lengthy process. We'll be coming back and forth on matter before we do a formal adoption. There may also be something else that crops up, depending on what comes out of the colloquium report itself. But I do want to thank both of you for coming here this morning. I want to thank the committee members on this issue. For those who were not here when I spoke to the agenda, I indicated there was a strong likelihood that we would finish at about 11 or so because we were not dealing with the colloquium, which had not been ready to deal with. So on that pleasant note of early time and adjournment, the meeting is adjourned until tomorrow. Same venue. Thank you.
report to you, to put in a petition.
Right, okay,
to move on. Mm-hmm. I'm just putting in his laptop.